What's up, everybody? This is Jenna Greason coming to you live and in person. This is the Hypnotic Comic Radio Show, and I'm Jenna Greason, your host, the Hypnotic Comic. I am both hypnotic and comical. That's why the show is called that. Seriously, folks, I'm a hypnotherapist, and I help people to overcome fears and anxiety so that you can live your best life in more fulfilling, enjoyable, wholehearted, joyful ways. And we got stand-up comedy happening regularly at the Comedy Store in Hollywood on Sunset Boulevard. All our upcoming show details can be found at thehypnoticcomic.com. I don't have that in front of me right now, so I apologize for that for now, but you can find that information on thehypnoticcomic.com. And today we have two amazing guests, so I'm really honored and excited to be talking with today. Our first guest is going to be the very talented and wise and beautiful Lisa Singer Hesse. And Lisa has been working in television for the last 14 years as a writer, a producer, a director. She's worked on shows such as The Biggest Loser, MasterChef, Top Chef, Celebrity Rehab, The Wahlberg, Hollywood Medium, and lots of other well-known shows, including working with the writing of Harry Potter with Warner Brothers. So she has a very impressive resume. Lisa, most recently, is working on a revealing self-revealing, that sounds very naked, but I don't mean to say naked, but an internally self-revealing documentary about her life as the daughter of a transgender father and being on that journey with her father called My Father Stephanie, My Dad Stephanie, excuse me. And we also are going to get the great honor and opportunity to speak with Stephanie today on the show. So I'm super grateful. Right now we have if I could just introduce Lisa. Lisa, are you with us? Can we hear your voice?
Yes, I am here. I'm so excited. Thank you so much, Jenna.
Oh, thank you, Lisa. I'm so grateful to be on this show with you. And thank you so much for taking your time. I know you have a really full schedule, and this is our Labor Day today. And so we're celebrating all of your great work today and appreciate the opportunity to talk to you. So, I've known you, I think, for about a good 10 years, and we've reconnected recently. You and I have some similar histories and then some really, you know, differences in our stories. And one of the things that we both shared is that we both went through the transition of losing our moms. And I know that that was a really tough transition for you, but it also came to you at a time where there was a sense of celebration and relief, in my understanding, where you came to a place of real healing with your relationship with your mom before she passed. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Oh my gosh, that's like the best story ever. I'm happy to tell the story and share it.
Yay.
Especially because it's, I don't know. It's just, I hope it gives other people hope.
Yeah.
My mom and I had just what I always thought was a perfect relationship, up until I was about 24. I mean, she was so beautiful. She was like an Ally McGraw. She was so loving and, very, much like, an earth mother, you know, and, smart. And, I think she, you know, in her own way, probably over worried about us, you know, as a lot of mothers do. And, eventually she got breast cancer, and that she got breast cancer when she was about 39. So she was pretty young. And then, that went away. And then my parents, my dad, Stephanie, who's on the line, and my mom, broke up and divorced. And my mom got into a relationship with somebody that was difficult. He was actually her business partner, therapist, and also had counseled people in our family. And anyway, my mom's personality kind of changed, and it was very painful for me. And we had a very sort of intense relationship for a a good 20 years. And
that's
but slowly
really
towards
time.
The end. Excuse me, Jenna?
Oh, sorry. I said that's a really long time to be in a tense relationship with your mom for 20 years.
Yeah, it was a really long time. And the truth is I was really angry for a long time. She actually, her and her partner were just, he was a bad influence, and her personality changed. They were mean. Like, all I can say, he was mean, and she was going along with it. I at some point down that road, after I don't know, maybe even 10 years, just living my life as a very angry, angry person, I realized that I didn't want to be angry anymore, and it was also affecting just my ability to function in the world. I was like, I got kind of agoraphobic. I was in film school, and I couldn't leave my apartment without like a backpack filled with supplies, like if there was an earthquake or an emergency.
Yeah.
So I would leave
that
the house.
Right? Was that the fear, like there was an earthquake or emergency, or is it just like this free-floating fear, like something could go terribly wrong?
It was anything could go wrong, especially I could run into people from film school and they could discover the truth that I was temping.
Which, of course, is way worse than an earthquake or a flood.
Yeah, they could discover the truth that I was temping and that I was not a big successful movie director or screenwriter, or, you know, my career was really not happening. So
yeah.
I had just gone into this massive fear, and I didn't want to leave my apartment. And I knew, like, as I was, like, from an outside person's perspective, looking, like, I felt like I left my body and looking at myself and go, okay, something's wrong. You're acting a little crazy. People don't really need to leave their house with Band-Aids in their, like, backpack, you know? So I started therapy, and then I started to realize how much anger I had at the time.
I love that transition. Can we just pause for a moment and enjoy that transition? You're like, I just, you know, it's not normal that people, you know, you worry that people could find out that, or to discover that you've got Band-Aids in your backpack. And then, so I started therapy.
I probably had cough syrup and a book, you know, like just a book to read in case I had to just, I couldn't get back into my apartment. And I mean, it was filled with supplies. So, that's true. I see the humor in that for sure. And luckily, our family, and that's one gift that my dad, Stephanie, has definitely given all of us a sense of humor, so we can laugh at ourselves.
Right.
And so I started therapy, and then I, at some point in therapy, I just didn't want to be angry anymore. So I just, that was the focus of therapy, is like, how do I rid myself of this just painful anger and just frustration? I want to have a relationship with my mom. I want to feel close to her. I want to be like it used to be. And it couldn't, because she was doing something different, but I just wanted that so desperately, and that's what drove me to therapy to start working on all my stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And she ended up getting cancer again.
Mm-hmm.
And I can just say the end result was that in the last two weeks of her life, we healed our relationship, and it was completely back to mommy-daughter relationship while she was in the hospital before she passed on. So I call that a huge miracle, and I'm so grateful that she, you know, we healed everything. I mean, in such a profound way. And it wasn't like, I'm sorry I did this, or I'm sorry I did that. It was, I'm so grateful that I can bring this water bottle to my mother who is ill. And I'm so grateful that I can yell at the doctor for not giving her enough food. And I'm so grateful that I can, that she's, you know, we're just sitting here telling each other we love each other. And at the time, it was, we could hold hands and watch Obama being inaugurated. It was just like, just all the little things I was just had filled with gratitude for.
Wow, that's gorgeous. It's really beautiful. You know, I appreciate so much you telling the story, and I feel like this is such a beautiful way to introduce the story that you're moving through, and you're coming out with and telling the story that you're telling with your dad now, and what unfolded in your life back then. Was that was like 9 years ago? Is that right? That your mom?
Oh, with my dad, Stephanie. Actually, it was over 4.5 years ago.
Yeah. No, I mean when your mom. Before we go there, I want to ask you when your mom transitioned.
Yeah.
Oh,
when your mom passed.
Okay. So you're asking about her visit?
No. Are you not hearing me very well?
I feel like I can't. I'm sorry. I can't hear you. Okay. Go ahead. Sorry.
So your mom passed away about 9 years ago?
Yes. About 9.5 years ago.
9.5 years ago. Yeah. So I'm just looking at, what you took from that relationship, what you took from that time and the gifts that came from that time that are being, I think it sounds like, are being really played out in your relationship with your dad now, in this transition time that I think you're finding a lot more grace and beauty in the transition that you're moving through with your dad. Because of your relationship with your mom, because of how you suffered before your mom passed and the gratitude that came during the time of her passing from having healed your relationship.
Right, exactly. That's an excellent observation that, you know, I lost my mom, but we did heal our relationship, and knowing how possible that is. So my dad and I always laughed together and had a lot of fun, but there was also some tension and some anger. And, when my dad finally told us the truth of her other life and her truth that she is a woman, in a man, you know, she looks like a man, but she's a woman. Now she looks like she's a beautiful woman. Now, for the time, was headed to more of the masculine self. When she told me that, it was like amazing. And it was finally a light bulb. Everything kind of sort of made sense about what our relationship had been before. It's mm-hmm. different though with my mom. My mom had was more painful with my dad. Because of course my dad's alive, you know, like it's a big difference.
Oh my
God. Mom died and my dad, it's like people say, oh gosh, you're handling your dad's transition so well. It's like, oh my God, my dad's happy. She's healthy. She looks great. She has beautiful mm-hmm. bags and shoes. what do I have to be? It's her life, and what do I have to be? You know, I can glance at the past and think of stuff that, you know, that was upsetting, but really it all kind of, oh, that makes sense now. You can't get mad. My dad spent years trying to play the dad role. You know,
yeah.
He did that for us, most of all. So
even
though there was, you know, this other life, I don't know. I think if my mom didn't die, I might not be able to see it so clearly. But
yeah.
My mom, you know, I think that's what you're saying, is that I
yes.
can just have great gratitude and be sort of happy and, you know, more understanding.
Absolutely. You know, I really hear that. And, you know, I think it's sometimes it's like our life experiences and, you know, sometimes the hardest life experiences give us the greatest insights to the stuff that's coming later that we're better equipped for, you know, and I really hear that in you right now. And I'm in a similar place. And of course, it's a very different story, but nevertheless, there's similarities, I think, in sort of like the emotional tone and the lessons, like my dad's at the end of his life right now, which is not the same as yours, but nevertheless, I learned from my mom dying that life is so precious. And even though my dad is in a very different state than he was growing up, that when I was growing up, you know, my dad was, a business owner and played catch with us and was very much participating, you know, in my life. And now I have to go to him and he can hardly very literally lift his own hand. So, you know, it's really tragic and for me, and I know that your situation isn't tragic. It's not the same thing, but nevertheless, it's like the gifts of having lost our moms help us to see the beauty and the gifts of what is here as life. And my dad's life, my dad's presence is actually really, truly extraordinary. Like the love that comes out of him and the joy that comes out of him. I think, I don't know that, similar to you, I don't know if I would have been able to appreciate it. I don't know that I would have been able to appreciate it had I not gone through the loss of my own mom's presence. You know, I'm just like, oh my gosh, my dad's life is so extraordinary. My dad's life is so extraordinary. And I really hear that with you too. And you're really finding appreciation for your dad's presence in your life. And it also sounds like you guys, you and your dad now, moving into more of you and your dad, you and your dad have moved into a greater relationship, having gone through the transition that he's gone through, and you being an accepting, loving presence for him. That, would you say that that's true, that your relationship is like deeper now than it was before his transition, his transgender transition? Her transition, I
you know, we don't know if it's deeper, because we always have sort of a deep relationship, but I would say it's more fun in a lot of ways, because we're focusing on humor. We're focusing on, you know, beauty supplies.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot. We both have a strong interest in storytelling and stand-up performing. My dad is an incredible storyteller, always has been, but she's pursuing it more now. So it's so fun to watch that. And, you know, I mean, I wouldn't say there, it's not that when my dad came out, I'm not saying there wasn't pain. There's pain there. There's pain and, some anger, hurt. Because, you know, my dad had to hide this other life. And I understand it intellectually, but the little girl in me is like, wait, what? You weren't 50% doing things with me or for me all the time, you know?
Yeah.
So that was part of it. But I think just feeling those feelings, but also understanding that my dad didn't have a choice. Or didn't feel that she had a choice at the time. It was, you know, living the life of a man. She didn't have a choice. But now, so, you know, she can be free. I mean, I was there, you know, when I met Stephanie, it was like I saw my dad die in front of me. Let me back up. My dad actually, I said, I want to see Stephanie. Will you put on your makeup? Will you, you know, become Stephanie in front of me? And my dad graciously agreed. And of course, I'm a filmmaker, so I had to film the whole thing. And I was fine joking around and totally was all fine. And then my dad put on an eyelash. And then everything got really different, really fast.
Yeah.
And that,
so that was when,
like,
the reality set in.
Yeah, that's when the reality hit. Thank you. And then I... really, looking back, I didn't know what I was feeling, but it really was like my dad, in a way, was dying. And but quickly, I met a new member of our family, which was Stephanie. Mm-hmm. So even though my dad's still there, of course, it was a very unusual situation, and it was very beautiful, because while my husband was filming, we all felt like there was so much joy in the room. It was transcendent. It was like, oh my God, there's this member of our family we never knew, and she kind of looks like Aunt Margie. Wait, she looks a little more like Aunt Margie. Oh, I see Nana in there.
Wow.
Wait, you know, wait, you have got to get your toes done, because that is not going to go fly here for the singer ladies.
That's what you tell me about when you were like analyzing your dad's new look as Stephanie. You're like, those toes, Dad, we got to do something with those toes.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. It's sweet. And I get there's so much pain in that. And that's also, you know, in the journey with doing stand-up comedy, is like, that's some of the best humor, you know, is the stuff that's so painful and so confronting and can be really confusing emotionally, like all the different layers of like, wow, I'm watching my dad dying, but then there's this new family member coming out and it looks like our aunt and our nana, and but your toes, and like, oh my God, there's just like so many different pieces to the wildness of life in general that we're all facing. And, you know, I think for so many humans on the planet, maybe in particular in this country, it's like we're all just trying to figure out what normal is and try to, you know, melt in, you know, as the American old melting pot. But now the melting pot is really becoming more the mixed salad, where we're like, actually, I don't want to melt so much into what's normal. I want to find what my truth is. I want to find who I really am on the inside and let that come out in its true colors, you know, so the beautiful, bright salad and the colorful. I'm just laughing at my own thought process.
You might get the, yeah, for my dad, Stephanie, was this.
So I have tomatoes, a lot of different colors. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Sometimes so the colorfulness. I feel like it's, you know, it's sort of like a sign of the times that we're in right now, not to make it sound temporary, but rather to make it about like a human awakening that's happening. That's like, who am I? Am I a blonde woman? Am I a brunette man? Like, what is the truth of who I feel and know myself to be on the inside? And it can be confusing and scary and painful and all these different emotions. And then, you know, if we can find some of that laughter and levity through the difficulty and through the pain and through the grieving, because there, it does sound like there's grieving in there too for you, that losing who has been your dad your whole life, this strong, tall man. Who sounds and looks in the pictures that I've seen look very, you know, masculine and very much like the all-American dad. So I get that there's, you know, grieving in that for you. And I'm curious, was there ever a time where you felt like you had resentment to your dad? Like, can't you just say dad for me?
Oh, interesting. I think... No, I did not feel like that. My sister, I shouldn't speak for her, but I think there was a part of Julie, my sister, who felt a little bit like that. But no, I don't know what happened. Here's what people have found sort of unusual about my story. They're like, how did you just accept it? And of course, you know, I do think it has a lot to do with my mom. And just, you know, well, this person's not dead. I'm, you know, be happy. It doesn't matter to me. But I did. So I'm from the Bay Area, very liberal family, very, you know, kind of, you know, open to lots of different things. And so after my dad told me and also my sister, I went home and I went to bed and I woke up in the middle of the night. And I just sat with myself in a very quiet way. And I said, am I really okay with this? Like, am I really okay with this? Because this was actually before transgender came out. Transparent. This, before Caitlyn Jenner. So it wasn't on the zeitgeist. It was about 6 months before that. And my dad's always a trendsetter. So, you know, visionary sort of avatar, just ahead of the game. So I woke up in the middle of the night and I thought to myself, I'm really okay with this, you know, I'm a liberal family. And I was like, yes, my soul just loves her soul. I don't really care what the packaging is. As long as she's happy, I'm okay. And I was just okay. And I'm really glad I did that check-in just with me, because if I wasn't okay, it would be okay. And I could keep that as a secret and just not tell everybody and be okay. But the truth is I was. And from then on, I just tried to be helpful, because she had to go, you know, she had told me and my sister first. Her wife knew at the time, but we were actually right then, and then told friends, family members and friends. So I came up and I'm from the Bay Area, from Los Angeles up to the Bay Area, and helped with some of those conversations just to be a supportive person. Yeah.
Beautiful. That's powerful. Yeah. That's a huge transition for you. It sounds like you had to go through a huge transition yourself in order to become that loving, helpful. It's like, I want to say something beyond daughter, you know, it's like you're loving, helpful, kind, loving soul, family member, daughter, you know, to be able to accept it, I think, is one thing. But then to, I mean, it's like, I feel like I want to say more of that, more about that, even the idea of being able to accept that your father is transitioning to become a woman. The process of accepting that is huge. And I can imagine that for other people who might be facing that or have faced that before, that there's a part of their heart that would never, might never, you know, heal or be willing to accept that, even if they behaved a certain way on the outside or spoke a certain way on the outside. But I really hear that you've brought the wholeness of your heart, or really have sought to bring the wholeness of your heart to your father's, I want to say, truth, you know, not just decision, but truth, and to bring that level of acceptance and support and helpfulness. It's really tremendous, and it's really an example that I think we can all benefit from, you know, even if our parent isn't going through that specific story. You know, how can we do that better for one another, for those of us, you know, that are having difficult stories to face, difficulty in what's happening in our, in whether it be our child or our parent, that someone in the family is doing something that you don't feel comfortable with. Like, this is sort of like the ultimate example of that as a possibility. Like, how can we create more loving kindness, more peace, in our families and in our own bodies with ourselves? Because I imagine, you know, if you were just to be in a place of like, I can't deal with this, you would be in a lot of pain yourself, Lisa.
That's true. And, you know, I think that probably, you know, it's okay for wherever someone was at. And I knew I had strength. I also, you know, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. This was a huge pivotal moment in my life, my dad's life, our families. And it was the right thing to do, is to be there. You know, I just never doubted that. Like, my dad really, at that point, was actually, his wife had broken up, and I sensed that my dad was, you know, this is pretty much alone, you know, didn't really have anyone to go have these conversations with. And it was the right thing. I mean, I don't think there's anything heroic about it in whatsoever. It's just my dad needed somebody to be with her, and I just was the person who was available. And it just, you know, it's sometimes it's hard, you know, if you're angry with somebody to put all that aside and put, there's a saying that put principles above personalities. It comes from the 12-step tradition. And I really like that. I didn't know that then, but it is really a cool thing. It's just, what's the principle here? We have a family member who is in emotional pain and is scared and is doing something very, very brave. You know, telling her best friend that all their lives, my dad told her best friend that all their lives together since high school, I got 70, so that's like 50 years of a friendship, that there's this secret. Is this person going to reject me? Is this person not going to like me anymore? That's a tough place to be in. So I didn't want my dad to go through that alone. And I thought I could, you know, and also we all have had our stuff. I had some stuff. I felt abandoned, and I don't, you know, just be helpful. It wasn't heroic in any way. I was just doing the best I can in the situation. And I think that's also true. Like, everybody in our family was just trying to do the best they could. Some family members had a harder time initially accepting this transition, because my dad was the, you know, kind of like a patriarch in our family in a way, the uncle, the right, strong man. For those of you who don't have a picture of my dad, when she was, so handsome, like an Italian movie star, Burt Reynolds, Tom Selleck, just gorgeous, and very, very masculine. And I think people, you know, were attached to that sort of fatherly, patriarchal, masculine image. I guess I wasn't. It didn't mean much to me. Just a person.
Wow. Well, you know, I have to wonder if there was a point, if there was any point for you where you're like, this isn't real. This isn't really happening. The transition of your parents from being a man that you've always known him to becoming a woman that you'd never known him to be before. Was there a period of time for you where there was just like, I guess you could call it denial, but I to me, I just would imagine that I'd be like, this can't be real. Like this is, has to be a phase or a joke or something that's like, this isn't real, Dad. Like, come on. Did that happen for you?
This is how it happened for me. 3 weeks night before I was going to see my dad, she said she had something to tell us and she needed 3 hours. And at the time I was really annoyed. Like, why do you need 3 hours? Anything else that's happened in our family, why do you need 3 hours? I'm going up to the Bay Area. I don't want to spend 3 hours. What do you, could you possibly need to talk to us about for 3 hours? And my dad was very sensitive. Was like, don't worry. I'm not in financial trouble. I'm not sick. I'm not dying. I just have, I need 3 hours. And I, and we were trying, having trouble with the schedule. I wanted to do this time. You know, everybody wanted different times. So I was getting annoyed. I was being like, I want to do it this time and I don't need 3 hours. That's really why. But then, so I wrote my dad an email and I said, Dad, why do you need 3 hours? Are you moving to India to be a guru? Are you, do you have a sister in the circus? Do you have another family? Are you getting a sex change operation? And then I crossed off, are you getting a sex change operation? And that's when, you know, your, my subconscious took over and rose to my, you know, my conscious mind and said, oh, that could be true. And I crossed it off.
Wow.
And that's when I kind of knew. So I kind of knew before my dad told me, because I had already done this writing, and never before would that have ever been a thought in my mind. Mm-hmm. So the question is it, I don't think I say it's not happening. I did that with my mom many, many times. It didn't happen. I'm just going to pretend for the next hour that my mom didn't die. Yes, I did that because that was so painful. But with my dad, it's just like, whoa, what? This is so weird. This is just weird. Like I would, and I don't mean weird like in a bad way, in a mean way, but it's shocking. And there were definitely that type of, I guess, denial or like shock reactions. Like I was asking my husband every day, you're not going to become a woman, are you? Like I really meant that.
Yeah.
And then I have a problem with pronouns now. Like I will call men she or her. Or if I'm a woman, I'll say, usually if I'm men, I have to think, like, is it he or her? Like, there's a part of my brain that is now unwired and not fixed because it takes a minute for me to think. It's to say, when I see somebody, I'm pointing at a man, oh, go see him. I would go see him. Wait, him, yeah. but
it's like that wire got loose in your brain.
Yeah, there's a wire that's not working. But with, you know, denial, like this isn't happening. I didn't, because I had that when I did that email, I had like 3 weeks to process and think this is what it could be. And so when my dad did tell us, instead of like crying and being in shock, I was like, yes, I am so connected into my higher mind. I am brilliant.
Yeah.
I am a genius. And anything I need to know, I just need to write about it. That's
wow.
Right. I just write and it will come to me because I was able to figure this out. Well, obviously somewhere I knew it, but I didn't know it because somebody asked me that 4 weeks before, I would have said, oh my God, are you kidding? But just the act of writing it and being kind of quippy and just asking the questions, why do you need 3 hours? So at that point, my dad was not planning to get one, or it wasn't something we were talking about, but it was when my dad said, I have gender dysphoria, my sister, you know, burst into tears, and I was like, yes, my agile mind.
Right.
I guess I'm just different than
beautiful.
People, other people. Excuse me?
That's a beautiful realization in the midst of this really challenging piece of news.
Yeah. And my dad, at the time when, I guess she didn't want to tell us, but you know, she was not a spring chicken anymore. So, you know, she was a senior citizen age. So this is, you know, it's a senior citizen transgender story.
Wow, that's amazing. That's a whole other level of amazing. And I imagine that would give you some level of acceptance too, because you're like, she's not a 20-year-old or a 16-year-old where you're like, oh, it's a phase. You're like, this is something you've been sitting with for something like 70 years now. Is that right?
Yeah.
Amazing. So let's just do a little station identification right now. We are currently talking to Lisa Singer Hesse. She is a writer, producer, director for television, and is currently creating a documentary called My Dad, Stephanie, about the transition of her father from the gender identity of being a man into becoming a woman in his 70s. Is that right, Lisa?
Yeah.
Since the 70s, yeah. And also, let's just put out the phone number. If anybody would like to call in, any of the listeners would like to call in, the phone number here is 888-627-6008. And we're currently live on BBS Radio. Again, the number is 888-627-6008. And then this will be on a podcast later where we won't be able to call in. But nevertheless, if you're listening right now, you can call in. So I think this is a wonderful time for us to transition. I like that word. I think we should use it as much as possible in this conversation. Let's transition now into talking to your dad, Lisa, your dad, Stephanie Singer. Stephanie, are you on the line with us?
I am here. I'm on the line.
Yay! Hi, Stephanie. So good to have you here. Thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate you being here. I appreciate so much your courage to come forward and tell your story publicly and share what you've been through and what this journey's been for you and what you've learned, what you've been challenged with, what has come out of it, the good, bad, and the not so pretty. So thank you so much for being here with us today, Stephanie.
Well, thanks for having me on.
My pleasure. So you're, as we were saying to Lisa, you're now in your 70s, and you, is that right? That was 4 years ago that you made the official transition, and now you're still in your 70s, and you've officially and completely transitioned to be a woman. Can you tell us a little bit in sort of a general way so that we can understand, including myself, I would love to be able to understand more specifically, what does it mean to be transgender? And then also, what does it mean for you to be transgender?
Wow, that's a great question. It's kind of controversial because transgender is a spectrum. It can go from somebody that is maybe just a cross, not just, but a person that's a cross-dresser that has getting emotional need or even sexual satisfaction to dress in the clothes of the opposite sex. That's kind of one end of the spectrum. A person that's, let's for now talking about a male to female. A male doesn't want to be a female, doesn't want to be a woman, but gets kind of a satisfaction or a need to do that. And then on the other, way, way on the other end of the spectrum, and it's a broad spectrum, is somebody like me that felt that they were a woman, they needed to do everything that they could to validate that and make that happen. And so I went like a more, I wouldn't say completer, but in my journey, I needed to go through hormones and eventually have a sex reassignment surgery. And that's where they repurpose your penis to become a vagina. You don't cut it off. People say, oh, you had your dick cut off. No, that's not what happened. They repurposed it. They used the material. I don't want to be too graphic for you, but that's what happened. So, yeah, that's the
more
deal.
Graphic,
so,
the better.
It's a broad spectrum of transgender.
Okay. Yeah. Wow. That's amazing. Thank you for explaining that. I really didn't know, and I still feel like as you're explaining it to me, I'm learning right now what it is, and it brings up more questions. But I appreciate so much the clarity that you're offering here. So Lisa, your daughter has has gone public. You guys are going public together with, you know, her journey and what it was like to find out that the way she explained it to me, or the way she identified it with me, she said that my dad came out as transgender. I think that's how she said it. So did you feel like you were transgender before your appearance changed?
Oh, yeah. My whole life. Yeah. That was the struggle of my life. I always felt different. I always knew that I had this feeling that I was different, this feeling of being, when I was young, being more, identifying more with being a girl, but couldn't do that, especially in the era that I grew up. A lot of pressure, yeah. A lot of pressure to be a boy, to be a man, to do all those kinds of things, and very harsh kind of treatment if you showed the least inkling of femininity. You know, yeah. Hard not only for, I'm going to say this, not only for somebody like me that was transgender, but even for like a non-transgender guy, a guy that had to kind of be, live up to this, very strict in my time, image of what it was to be a male. Mm-hmm. Very hard for all young men, whether you're trans or not, to kind of live up to that.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, in more modern times, you know, in comparison to when you were a child, let's say, you know, more than 60 years ago, children nowadays, like I'm sure you probably have heard more about this than I have, but things that I've been hearing about in our more modern times is people are exploring the conversation of gender and gender identity, that there's places in the, I'm going to say in this country, where parents are choosing to raise their children without gender, or to hear the children's desire, like a young boy's desire to wear a dress or to identify as a girl and to physically appear as a girl. And there's a lot of controversy around that, like the, you know, maybe the parents are doing it wrong. You know, maybe the parents are psychologically screwing up their kids, but you being where you are at this point in your life, I think you're like the perfect person to ask, you know, do you wish your parents, you could have talked to your parents when you were a kid? Do you think you would have been better adapted in the world? Or do you think, you know, how do you see parents like that today, the ones that are letting gender be this really fluid thing for kids under the age of 10, you know, who are just figuring out what it is to be a kid, let alone what it is to be a male or a female or an adult? Yeah, that's a complicated question, but nevertheless, it's love for you to answer.
No, it's a good question. It's a really good question. And no matter how they would have been at the time I was growing up, it probably wouldn't have made a difference too much, because the world was not accepting. So
yeah.
If you know, it just wouldn't have worked. You know,
right.
And they, you come to that realization pretty quick in that era anyway. So, in a way, they probably was better that they didn't, because it would have put me in a much more dangerous situation in the world.
Uh-huh.
But
okay.
Today, I think it's not all over, but there's certain areas, certain places, enlightened places, where a lot of parents are coming to grips with that and trying to understand about gender and about their child. And some of them are so wonderful in supporting their kids. And I think that really, really helps their self-image and their confidence. So I didn't have that, so I had a bad self-image and a low confidence, but it's really, that's the main thing, giving the child, you know, that, hey, you're okay. You know, you're okay. You're a real you're a human being. You're a good person. You're who you are, and that's okay. And that's what's good. That's whatever it is. You know, and being transgender is one of those things. Yeah, that's good. I'm glad that that's happening. Yeah.
Okay, so you're saying you're glad that when you say that you're glad that's happening, you mean you're glad that parents are giving their kids a voice to talk about their own mm-hmm. gender identity or gender dysphoria. Am I saying that right? Gender identity dysphoria. What? You're glad
happening? Exactly. I mean, just think about it. Just being kind, just being a good, kind human being, listening to your child, and that's what they're feeling and trying to understand it. And if you think you can support it, and I think, at some point, along that journey with your child, first of all, it's love, you love your child, trying to do the best for the person, the child. And at some point, you might want to consider, there's therapists out there, and there's people who know about this, and trying to work with something like that. Now, on a caveat about that, there's a lot of people, a lot of psychologists and psychiatrists that don't know anything about it. They're not good. That's good. That's a bad place to go. So you've got to kind of do your homework and find somebody. This person really knows about gender. Yeah. Go to that person.
Yeah. And did you have to go through your own process of therapy before you got your gender reassignment surgery? Was that required or is that something that you wanted?
Well, it's changing so fast. The kind of rules about getting the surgery is different.
Oh, is that right?
It used to be that you were required to have a certain amount of therapy, and you had to have a sign off by a psychiatrist and a clinical psychologist. That was at one point. I'm not up to exactly what's going on right in the moment, but I think it's obviously important that you get some kind of help, some kind of therapy for some mm-hmm. people. Not all people got their act together. They don't think they need it. That's fine for them, but most people do need a little bit of help. I don't know right now if it's necessarily required that you have the sign off by that.
Okay.
I think you do, though, by a therapist that, yes, this person is okay to have their therapy.
Yeah.
I mean,
not that I'm the expert here, but, it seems to me like it would be a really good idea to have a professional opinion about something like that, because it's not something you can change your mind about easily later, right? It's not like you can go and say, you know what, like, let's go back, right? I mean, is that possible? Can you change your mind? Can you go back? I have to ask.
No. Well, I mean, it'd be like a reverse thing. Then you'd have to you'd like have a vagina, but you'd have to pretend that you were had a penis or so. I don't know. I don't know how you do that exactly.
That's like my curious mind, but, I do think about that sometimes, it's just the topic of gender is in the air and it's a popular topic right now and it's a really controversial topic and it's, I think, a source of a lot of, not just controversy, but, pain for a lot of people. I think especially younger people who, maybe in their late teens or early 20s who are trying to figure out who they are. And I remember, being in that time of my life, my late teens, early 20s, and I'm like, that was a really hard time. I'm in my early 40s now. You're welcome, everybody. But I still feel like I'm figuring out who I am, and I feel like, to me, the idea of getting a tattoo is like such a huge commitment. I'm like, you can't ever go back, you got a tattoo, you can't go back, So I think about that, how does that level of certainty happen? For me to get a haircut is a big deal, oh God, I'm going to have short haircut. It's going to take me 3 years for it to grow back. And it's just such a huge commitment. And
sounds like a sex change is not on your agenda there.
Say that again.
I said it sounds like a sex change is not on your schedule. Not that I have enough trouble getting a haircut. I'm not going to get a sex change.
I think that's true. I'm still getting used to the fact that I have a vagina. What is this business? What is this vagina business going on here? I'm still getting used to it. All my boobs. Like, where did these come from? I just feel like life is complicated, and I know that, you know, the kind of experience that you've had is very different than most people. And so, like, that's, you know, a big part of my interest in having this conversation with you too, is like, what is that like? And are you really happier? And do you ever regret it? Like, those are the kinds of questions that I want to ask. You know, like, I studied social psychology, or I studied sociology and psychology as two majors in undergraduate school. And that was the kind of stuff, like, where does the social norms and social expectations meet the true psychology of the individual? And how does our individual psychology get affected by the social norms and the social expectations? And I just feel like you're just like this profoundly beautiful example of saying, you know what? This is where the psychology breaks away from the social norms, and this is what it looks like. And so now I'm like, okay, can I pick your brain, and can we talk about this? And like, did it work? Are you happier? Did you lose friends? Were you scared to lose friends? And, you know, things like this that I want to ask you all these questions. So, we have about 10 minutes left. I have to kind of prepare for that, but I have like 1,000 questions that are relevant to that. So would you just talk about that? Maybe I could just open up the floor for you, Stephanie, to talk about, you know, since you had your gender re-identification surgery and coming out as transgender to your two daughters and to your wife at the time, were you afraid to lose love? Were you afraid to lose relationships? Are you happier now? And do you have any regrets? That's a threefold question. I gotta acknowledge that I'm making it tough on you here, Stephanie, but will you just talk about that journey a little bit and what it's been like for you?
Sure. That's the thing. I mean, I think for myself, and I'm not going to speak for other transgender people. We all have different stories, right? But in my story, and it is true for many of us, that we have a huge fear we're going to lose our friends, our jobs, our relationships, our children. Our whole life is going to change, and it's so frightening. And for so many people, it is devastating. I mean, they do lose relationships, they do lose friends, they do lose jobs, they lose everything, and in many cases end up very alone, you know, and seek friendships among the community. That's a wonderful thing about our community, is that you can develop really meaningful friends and support within the community, but that doesn't totally make up for the loss of your life. And that's why it's such a difficult decision to make, you know, to make that kind of decision, because it is so profound. It's so life changing. In my case, I was so lucky. I was so fortunate. I just have been a very lucky person that my family has supported me, my children support and love me. I'm getting so much love, I'm getting so much support. My friends have stayed with me. I've had very few, being rejected hardly at all. I've been very lucky, and the world at large has been, pretty good too. I mean, I have not had too many, I've had some, I've had some bad experiences out there in the world, but for the most part, it's been pretty good. You know,
good.
Sometimes, you know, you have to steel yourself. And I'm going to go out and I do something. I try to stretch myself. I try to do something more and more like kind of scary all the time. I always like push myself and do that. I'm going to go into a biker bar. You know?
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to push the envelope here. I'm just going to go to the ballet. You know, ballet and there's going to like, they're going to be nice to me. They'll like me. But no, I'm going to go to them. I'm going to go like, to, something like that. You know.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a tremendous amount of courage.
I'm going to go to that on Facebook, but you know what I'm saying. Yeah,
so
it's good to
for you,
yourself.
For you, doing this transition, meaning like the physical aspect of it as well as the emotional, mental aspect of coming out to your family, was it an act of courage for you? I would imagine it was really scary, you know, that it would be, that you could be rejected by your daughters, you could be rejected by your wife, the people you're working
yes.
with. Like, how do you face that? That just sounds tremendously scary to me.
It is. And, it's just, you come to the point where you kind of have to do it because the alternate is worse. You know, it's a point where you got to choose between something bad and something hard to do, but something that's really horrible. And part of, and Lisa did this very kindly, didn't talk about, you know, like something, you know, the bad part about how I was as a person very kindly. But, you know, I had to sublimate a lot of what was going on inside me. And the way I sublimated it was doing stuff that I'm not very proud of. You know, I had affairs. I cheated on my wife, plural, okay? And I did things that were not nice. I was, I was being overly macho sometimes. I was being like, I was trying to prove my masculinity. So all that stuff was like really negative. I was doing negative stuff. So, yeah. So am I going to be that person? I'm gonna fight the bullet and tell people, yeah, I gotta do that. I gotta tell people, yeah, it was tough, but yeah, it was much better than being that person that I didn't like. You know?
Yeah. That makes sense, though. It's almost like it totally doesn't make sense, and at the same time, it does make sense. It's like the ways that, I've had a therapist who said, you know, if you don't tell the truth comes out sideways. You know, it's like we have
yes.
these, like, sideways ways of expressing ourselves that are just like, I'm discontent and this sucks. And, you know, and I don't know how to express the truth of it. I don't even know if I know how to identify the truth of it. Right. It sounds like that's what you were going through. And so it's sort of coming out sideways is this like hyper macho behaviors. That's like the ball swinging the other direction.
It's also just not all about me, okay? I think I told the kids when I was coming out, hey, this is just about me, it's about all of us. And I'm going to become a better person. You know, I'm going to be better for me, but I'm also going to be a better person for you.
Beautiful. And has that been true? I mean, if I could ask you to be even more vulnerable, you're being very vulnerable, and I appreciate it so much, but to be even more vulnerable, to say, do you feel like you're a better person now? Like, has it made you a better person? If so, how? And if not, like, what is that like for you, you know? And has it been beneficial in your relationships, the people that have mattered the most to you?
And I'm going to step in as a daughter just for one second
and
ask my dad, Stephanie, if you could speak into the mic a little better. I can hardly hear you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Better?
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks, Lisa.
Yeah. Yeah. So again, what was the question?
Has it made your relationships better, or has it just taxed your relationships? Has it made them harder, more difficult in some ways? Or if you could speak about that.
Well, I think being truthful is to me was the answer. Being truthful, I have nothing to hide. So then I can be honest, and being honest with everybody. And we talked about this a little bit before. Yeah, being honest, but being kind at the same time. Kind and honest. So always keeping in mind that I want to be kind. I want to be kind to everybody, and I want to be honest. So finding that way of doing both is the same. Yeah, no, it's been way, way, way better than me. I think I'm a better person, but also did other things, you know, too. I'm not sure if that was all that helped me, and I did spiritual work too, so whatever worked.
Yeah, well, it sounds like for you, and something that you're saying right now, but not saying directly, is to give yourself permission to embrace entirely a new gender for you was an honest and kind thing for you to do for yourself.
Yes. Yeah. I was taking care of myself. And what that resulted in was taking care of myself and taking care of everybody around me is what happens when you do that, I think.
Beautiful.
I think when you take care of yourself, it goes beyond that. Yeah.
I have one final question, then we got to wrap up. Thank you so much for that. So Stephanie, I just want to ask you, do you ever have days or moments where you regret your decision?
No, I don't. I don't regret it in the least at all. No, right. I don't regret it.
Good.
Yeah.
All right,
because
good.
I can still do certain things that I did before, you know.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. Just because I'm a woman doesn't mean I can't, you know. Do stuff that I didn't
speaking
perform.
To the choir, girl. You're speaking to the choir.
Yeah, we can do anything.
Just because I'm a woman doesn't mean I can't throw the ball like I used to.
Yeah.
Something like that. Like
exactly.
A solid
exactly.
Throw. All right, beautiful. Well, thank you so much. This is a beautiful place for us to transition and our call, and I'm using the word transition as much as I can, apparently. It just keeps coming out. So, Stephanie, thank you so much for joining us and for your vulnerable, open share with us. And, you know, I think it's been really illuminating. And I think, you know, some of what we can take from this is just like that place where you landed there with that honest kindness, the honesty and the kindness, like what the gift that we can all really benefit from regardless of the story that we're living through. And I think there's so much to be gained from hearing the relationship that you've had with yourself, the relationship you've had with the people around you, including your daughter, Lisa. And thank you, Lisa, so much as the daughter and filmmaker of this story, creating the documentary, My Dad, Stephanie, the story of your father's transition from being a man to becoming the woman that he is. And handing the mic back over to you real quick, Lisa, do you have a website or somewhere where we can find more information about the documentary, or do you have any GoFundMe pages that we should know about?
Oh, thanks so much. That's awesome that you asked. We're going to be building a website, and we are doing a GoFundMe to just help with the finishing funds for the documentary. And that GoFundMe page will be under My Dad, Stephanie, probably the beginning of next week. You know, anything you can contribute, $5, $5,000, whatever it is. We just want to finish, you know, just the editing, to pay for the editor and some onlining, and get it into some festivals. Because the main thing is it's creating awareness. But more than that, it doesn't have to be such a heavy topic. It can be fun, actually.
Absolutely. Yeah, I appreciate that. I mean, you said you're having more fun with your dad more now than ever, so I hear that it's been a really fun process for you.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to be this heavy thing. This can be, and I'd like more people to see that, so that just basically takes any kind of old stigmas and fear and confusion away. The more my dad and I are transparent about what that transition is and why my dad, you know, is a woman and not a man, it just helps people understand. The more understanding, the more awareness, and the more humor, you know, people can have fun with it.
Absolutely. Beautiful. Well, I love it and appreciate you guys so much. It's been such a joy to have you on the show. I thank you guys, and thank you for the radio program, and thanks to our assistant, Doug. I'm Jenna Grayson. This has been the Hypnotic Comic radio show, and appreciate you guys so much. And we will be back live next week, next Monday at noon once again. And if you want to find out some more information, you can find us on thehypnotic.com. Also, we have the bbsradio.com/hypnoticcomicslive. Thanks so much, and we are out for today.